This is the resumption of day 15. Mr. Farrell has returned, virtually returned.
Is it like generally remote?
To talk to us about Maligan's Investments Limited. Now, just a point of clarification, Mr. Farrell, having suggested you appear today, I had forgotten that you had transferred your Stream 18 appearance for Wayfair to the final week, so I apologise for that, but I'm assuming that we'll stay with that arrangement. We'll hear from you for Wayfair on both sets of issues next week. Is that your plan?
Correct.
So this is just about Maligan's Investments. So on that note, would you care to read your summary? Given that we haven't had time to read Mr. Gardner Hopkins' legal submissions, you better tell us what the relief is that he's proposing at your paragraph one. But otherwise, okay, can you just read your summary into the record?
Sure. So this is my summary dated today. Summary of planning evidence by Ben Farrell. Recommended amendments. I support the relief being sought as set out in the legal submission by Mr. Gardner Hopkins, tabled today, 5th of August 2020. And I have in front of me that legal submission, and it's on, it's appended to the end of that, pages 7 to 11. And to clarify, it is not the same relief as was appended to Mr. Gardner Hopkins' earlier legal submission.
Oh, okay, that was going to be my question. So can we strike out that other relief?
Yes, yes. This relief supersedes the former relief. And new information, updated relief sought by Mill. Since preparing my evidence in June, I have had the opportunity to review the additional material provided by the submitter on this matter, including a legal submission by Mr. Gardner Hopkins, 27th July 2020, lay evidence by Mr. Brett Giddens, the natural hazard assessment by Mr. Grant Meldrum, and the transportation assessment by Mr. Jason Bartlett. I have also had the opportunity to liaise with Mr. Gardner Hopkins and Mr. Giddens since they presented to you last Thursday. Maligan's Investments Limited has since amended the relief it is seeking, which is now reflected in the documented table by Mr. Hopkins today. Natural hazards. The natural hazard evidence is now conclusive that, quote, there are no natural hazard concerns provided that issues of runoff and earthworks are given consideration at the time of that development, end quote. I note, reference to runoff and earthworks are managed under Chapter 25, Earthworks, so there is no reason for natural hazards to be specified as a matter of control or discretion. Access / transport. Based on my experience living in Queenstown and working as a planner on various commercial activities, coupled with my familiarity of the remote location of Skippers, I consider it is entirely realistic to anticipate that most visitors to the Skippers Rural Visitor Zone would rely primarily on commercial / chartered transport options, including air travel. Residential activity. Well, I maintain my opinion, set out in my June evidence, that it is appropriate for residential activity to be permitted throughout rural visitor zones. Maligan's Investments Limited has amended its relief to pursue a stringent permitted residential activity standard within a visitor accommodation unit up to 180 days. I am not aware of any direction in any higher order policy document that seeks to avoid residential activity in rural zones, including rural visitor zones. I have assumed that policy 46.2.1.7 is subject to challenge and can be deleted or amended in response to submissions or evidence on this matter. If policy 46.2.1.7 is to be retained, then I consider it would be appropriate to amend the policy to list or prescribe the circumstances where residential activity is provided for, including the amendment now being sought by Maligan's Investment Limited.
Well, on the face of the matter, Mr. Farrell, given that there are submissions seeking that Chapter 46 be deleted, virtually any qualification of the existing provisions would be within scope. So I wanted to ask you about access and transport. I think you had departed when I talked to Mr. Giddens about this. And effectively, Mr. Giddens' response was you can't stop idiots who will... Well, I use the concept of a driver camper van, ignore the sign at the top of the summit and keep going. Is there any planning, sensible planning response that you can make? As you say, you would hope that most people would do the smart thing and take an organised transport option, but for the idiots who insist on driving themselves without the experience to do so and the equipment to do it safely, what do you do about them on the basis that there are bound to be some?
The only, I guess, statutory planning matter that I can toss up is the introduction of the traffic effects matter in the new, in the RDA provisions. So where a resource consent is required, then on each case discretion can be applied and those actual safety issues can arise then. On the face of it, I think the road is a road and it's a public road and QLDC maintains that road. And I would have thought that from a strict planning point of view, it was not for us to prejudice against the use of that road, even though we may sense that it doesn't feel entirely safe. I don't have too much to add about that. I do rely on Mr. Bartlett's commentary, even though it might not be accepted as evidence in this case.
Well, we've accepted it as non-expert commentary. I suppose the probably... I should probably say to you that at the point when our nomad driver started reversing up the road, it was more than a sense of lack of safety.
Is not the planning, and I don't want to delve into the law at all, but if the road is unsafe, then the roading authority will have to close it off. And I would have thought that from a resource management point of view, we don't have evidence saying it's unsafe for the intended use. In fact, in this case, the situation which creates fear is one of an idiot using the road. And I don't think we plan for idiots, do we? We just have to take it, in my view, as it is. and it is a public road administered by QLDC, there are practical restrictions and usability of that road, and they can, have been and can be factored into this rezoning request.
Changing the issue to the policy you've recommended, I haven't checked against the revised relief, but reading in your evidence at paragraph 25, it talks about enable practical infrastructure design considerations as an alternative. What's that mean? What do you mean by that?
That has since moved on.
Well, that's a good answer.
to page 7 of the legal submission table today. New policy 46227. Provide for roading and infrastructure within the Skipper's Rural Visitor Zone to be of a rural standard, character and appearance, and provide solutions for roading and infrastructure that recognises the remoteness of the location and avoids urban forms such as curb and channelling and street lighting as an alternative to adherence to the Council's urban guidelines for subdivision and development.
In a similar vein, the the discussion about building material and colours, I wondered whether building appearance, because that's what you're managing, and the effects of that appearance are just a matter of material and colours. Are there broader considerations?
You mean broader considerations as to the design of a road, for example?
Or, paragraph 34 of your evidence, you said... controlled activity status will sufficiently protect, maintain or enhance landscape values. Is the effect of buildings on landscape values just a matter of building material and colours? Presumably there are sizes separate, is dealt with separately, and maybe that's the answer, that they're in different controls.
Yes, and I must confess the submitter has, Maligans have moved on.
Point me to where it's now addressed.
Is it not addressed? They're not asking for that anymore.
That they're not asking for that relief anymore, basically. Mr. Giddens has accepted that rule can apply.
Yes, of course you are. You're absolutely right. Thank you for reminding me.
Sorry, I hadn't done my homework on my evidence of paragraph 34. At a broad level, though, I would philosophically say that where the landscape evidence has identified land or an area of land to be appropriate for development, and this is the low sensitivity landscapes, that I would... I'd support the controlled activity status. That was the regime in the ODP. And it just seems appropriate, in my opinion, that land can be developed without too much bother or discretion around building development. But the point is, submitter's no longer seeking that, so don't have to worry about formaligans.
So so let's not go looking for trouble, is the answer. And the paragraph 48, you make an observation while residential development's been permitted, the majority remotely located RVZs in the district have not been developed for residential or urban character use. And the submitter immediately before you is from Arthur's Point, so that is very fresh in our mind as to an RV operative ODP RV zone land that has got been, well, it's got to the stage where the 42A author is now recommending high density residential zoning to recognise what has happened in Arthur's Point North. So that's
where I would say Arthur's Point is not remote. And I think somewhere else in my evidence, I think the logical urban development areas, and I just think practically speaking, the market has worked out that they are urban areas, and that's why we've seen urban development in Arthur's Point. So I think with the exception of Arthur's Point, possibly an exception up at Cadrona, where it's a village, those are my experiences. I mean, Walter Peak's a classic. It's, I think the 2010 or 2000 review identified that it's permitted to have 5,000 or so residential units over there. There's never been a suggestion that there actually would be a residential or urban development, even though that's, and this is anecdotal, so it's not my evidence, but it was one of the originally surveyed townships of the lakes.
The interesting thing is the originally surveyed bit is not actually what we call Walter Peak, I think. It's not at Beach Bay, it's up the road around the homestead, I think. So that's by the by. Understand your point. Commissioner Hill, any questions?
A couple, Mr. Farrell, from me, going to the residential aspect, and I was just about to look up the submission, and I think Mr. Giddens, when we spoke to him last week, I think his residential activity rule was limited to Gibston and Maligans. I think what you've suggested is just to any rural visitor zone, is that correct?
Yes, so that's come about lately, where I had an opportunity to review what Mr. Garden Hopkins and Mr. Giddens had suggested, and I guess from a plan drafting point of view, I didn't see the benefit in having, you know, repeating provisions where you don't need to repeat provisions. And if the activity is appropriate in both zones, then, or all zones, then we should probably say that.
So I haven't checked the submission, but is there scope within your submission? Was it asked for more broadly?
I haven't addressed scope.
So that's something we might want to check. The more substantive question, I understand what you're saying, and you understand in that policy 46217, the avoid policy, could be changed if the panel's recommendation back to the council was that it should stay as it is, more in line with the way that the zone was notified. Would it therefore mean that the 180-day residential rule that you're suggesting, activity rule, would fail because it couldn't meet that objective test?
Yeah, I think it stands a strong chance of failing because a void is a void.
Right. So it really comes back in the end what the ultimate outcome, well.
I think there's definitely room to play. I haven't spent too much time on this policy, and my preference, if I was picking up the pen from the start, or if we get the opportunity to have another crack at it, would be I would be focusing on discouraging residential activity, not avoiding residential activity. I'd also be focusing on working out the as notified provision or policy talks about ancillary use, and I do wonder whether how far the interpretation of ancillary use can be taken, because ultimately if it's a residential unit for a landowner, then practically I would have thought there's a function there that ties back to the commercial use, because they're an investor or they're an owner of that development.
So it just prompts another question. If the objective and policy was ended up around discouraging, would that not signal that the activity status would not be permitted but would need to be some form of a consent?
Yes, and I would have thought there'd be a... certainly a case-by-case outcome, a case-by-case assessment where the overall outcome that we're trying to achieve is the rural visitor and visitor use. And so you do that by discouraging other land uses, such as residential activity, but then it allows consideration of potentially appropriate residential uses.
Thank you.
And for me, it would be hard to argue, if there's wriggle room in the framework on a case-by-case basis, it'd be hard to argue that allowing a landowner to have residential use on the site is inappropriate.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Dawson.
I haven't had a chance to read Mr. Gardner-Hopkins' latest supplementary legal submissions yet, but are you saying that he's addressed the issue of scope and that you're not addressing that at all?
He has had another crack at scope for you. He's confident in my discussions with him that there's scope.
For what?
It'll be fair to say he's not as confident that you might agree with him.
but you're not going to enter into this discussion.
No. What I would say, though, in respect of controlled activities, if that's part of the question you're thinking of, or not.
They're already controlled.
Yes.
Buildings are already controlled in the notified version, so
yes.
That's scope. The scope for that. I mean, what I'm the aspects that I wonder whether your submission. I mean, I've had a look at your submission, or your client's submission, and it's very supportive of the zone as notified, and think it's really good for the site. Other than the height, the 7 metre height, which it specifically mentions, but it doesn't mention anywhere that there are issues to do with residential activity, for example, or non-notification, structure plans, and then the subdivision provisions that come with that. But, I mean, if you don't want to comment on those, and we're just going to leave it to Jake Gardner-Hopkins' submissions, that's fine. I'm just interested if you have a view on...
I don't have a view other than it's probably an inappropriate view as a planning expert possibly, but it frustrates me that there's been so much conversation in the last 5 years around scope on this plan review. This district plan review is very large and complicated, and in my experience in this process, ultimately we go through the submission and the hearing process, and then we get to court, and it's almost as if at court we get to have another conversation around what is the most appropriate wording, irrespective of scope. So that's the comment I would make. I don't have any evidence for you on scope. My position throughout, including other topics, has been I just want to give you what I think is the most appropriate outcome, and I'll let others worry about scope. So sorry.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I just wanted to know. My other final question is around the use of a structure plan. I mean, I know that the latest plan that was attached to, I don't know, maybe Mr. Jones's evidence or your,
Mr. Milne.
Mr. Milne's. Mr. Milne's summary. It had a few extra things on it than not just the landscape sensitivity areas, but not much. Why do you think we need a structure plan and not just a landscape sensitivity plan?
Need, I wouldn't say it is needed. As I think Commissioner Dawson, you've already pointed out that most of the buildings are controlled until you get over the 500 square metre or proposed new 500 square metre threshold for the zone, which will then push everything into restricted discretionary. Appropriate, though, I would say it is. In my view, generally, the more specificity or fine-grained planning we can provide in the planning framework, the better. I guess the only real difference it makes in this case is around the subdivision and the controlled activity subdivision. And a structure plan is needed to get a controlled activity subdivision. So if there's no controlled activity subdivision, then there will be additional costs on the applicant, additional uncertainties perhaps around the subdivision. And those are not necessary in this case where we've got, if there can be an agreed, well, there is an agreed structure plan, potentially, to help streamline that process.
Give us a structure plan for the same reasons you've said. The more detail, the better. It better controls the effects and get a better understanding of how things are going to develop in that area. But that they're happy for subdivision not to be controlled, even though there's a structure plan, and it should just remain discretionary, like in the rural zone. Is your client not asking for that? They're asking for the controlled activity subdivision to come with the structure plan.
Correct. I think the controlled activity subdivision is effectively the only benefit of the structure plan to the submitter. And the submitter... obviously, I can't speak for the submitter, but they are, they know that that's what they are striving for in terms of the activity status for a subdivision.
Can I test that, Mr. Farrell? Might get into a situation where you could have a zoning with a structure plan where you can stay rural. That would seem to be a reasonably significant benefit to having a structure plan.
Sorry, I didn't quite understand what the benefit of...
If the presence or absence of a structure plan determines whether you get an RV zone or not, that would seem to be a reasonably significant benefit, irrespective of the consequences for subdivision.
Yes, absolutely. That is the, again, can't speak for the submitter, but the priority, and I think it's addressed in the submission table to you today, is the zoning. And whatever comes with that zoning is a matter of detail.
Strange enough, no questions. Well, Mr. Farrell, I think that's it from us for today. Wish you well. I hope the COVID test comes back negative and that you're feeling more chipper in the near future.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your time. Apologies I couldn't be with you, and we'll see you next week.
In the circumstances, we're not sorry we're not with you. I think you're better off where you are.
Well, we've done that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Safe travels.